This Intelligent Medicine podcast is brought to you by Cedarside.com, your all-natural, organic solution to pest control problems, protecting people, pets, and premises. Cedarside.com. Welcome to the Intelligent Medicine Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Ronald Hauptmann, and we have a very special guest in store for you on a topic that I think is going to be of great interest. It's the relationship between nutrition and mental health, particularly as it regards pregnancy. We're going to focus not just solely, but to some extent, on a serious problem, postpartum depression. Our guest is Dr. Shoshana Bennett. She is a PhD psychologist, affectionately known by her fans and readers as Dr. Shosh. And that's how I'm going to refer to her as we go through this podcast. And she's got a terrific background. She has a personal history, which she'll share with us in just a moment, that has gotten her involved in crusading for better support for patients suffering from postpartum depression. She has her own radio show. It's drshosh.com, and that's where you'll find her radio programs. She's also appeared as a guest expert on countless TV shows, 2020, Ricky Lake, The Doctors. She's a frequent radio talk show guest. She's been quoted all over the place, Huffington Post, CNN, Wall Street Journal, WebMD, many other places, Psychology Today. And she's recognized as an authority on postpartum depression. She's written a couple of books, Postpartum Depression for Dummies, Pregnant on Prozac, what a great title, Beyond the Blues, she's a co-author of, Understanding and Treating Prenatal and Postpartum Depression and Anxiety, and she's got a new book that she's going to tell us about, Children of the Depressed. It was recently released. So without further ado, here's Dr. Shosh. Welcome to Intelligent Medicine.
Thank you so much, Dr. Hauptmann.
And, you know, I might mention also that in addition to that, you do lectures, you do interactive teleclasses, and you do individual consultations. And later in today's podcast, we'll talk about how listeners can get in touch with you. So you actually have a personal saga to share with us about how you got involved in, you know, you're a clinical psychologist that empowers you to look at all aspects of mental health, but you have a particular interest from a personal standpoint in postpartum depression. Tell us about that.
It's true. My passion really came from personal experience. As you said, I was a special education teacher for many, many years. And, you know, when I was pregnant with my first child, everything went great. But as soon as I delivered, I knew there was something terribly, terribly wrong. I had never been depressed before in my life, but I was thinking the scariest things and so deep.
What do you mean? You see the scary things like destructive things towards your child? Because there have been these horrible cases where women have drowned their children, driven cars into lakes, and, you know, drowned their kids. I mean, just inexplicable stuff.
Yes. Now, usually when those media terrible things have happened, absolutely, usually that's postpartum psychosis.
Yes.
I had a postpartum depression. Certainly that can be life-threatening, and I was in suicidal depression, but I never had feelings of, you know, of harming my children. It was more about offing myself because I thought my children deserve something better than a mother like me.
Yeah, just a total lack of self-worth and
absolutely.
Worth and self-reproach
absolutely.
And a really hopeless outlook.
Yes, yes. And I really thought my husband and baby and then babies, because I went through it twice. Once you go through it once, unless you have a very good strategy, a very solid strategy of wellness, you're very quick to go into another depression. And of course, back then, we're talking the 80s now, you know.
Yeah.
My kids are grown. There was no help. Nobody was talking about this stuff. So I really, my family and I suffered on and off for many years.
And so, of course, the recourse is usually, you know, take a medication, right?
I was never offered a medication except one time where it was a very, it was the wrong medication, let's put it that way. It was completely inappropriate for what I was going through, and I had a terrible reaction to it, but that's a whole other show. Bottom line is, when I finally realized what this was, that this actually had a name, this was after my second born, and I was in the middle of my second suicidal depression, and I saw a program on television, and it was describing what I had been going through on and off for years. And it was at that moment that I thought, my goodness, there are so many of us suffering. Wasn't the medical profession, you know, why were we allowed to suffer the way we did? Why are we walking around without mommies being taken care of well and screened and helped appropriately? And that it was at that moment, with tears streaming, I don't mean to be melodramatic, but that was exactly what was happening. I was in front of the television with tears streaming down my face, thinking, okay, I've got to do something about this. So I turned the anger, frankly, that would have eaten me alive, into a passion and mission to educate medical professionals, mental health professionals, and help other moms who are going through what I was going through. And that's how this profession was launched, and I helped to pioneer the perinatal mood and, you know, mood and anxiety disorder field in the U.S.
Well, that's fantastic. So, you know, is this genetic? Is this nutritional? Is there something about lifestyle? I mean, what determines whether one is going to be likely to suffer from PPD, postpartum depression?
There certainly are high risk factors. If there are, you know, certainly the more psychiatric history a woman has with various issues, the more likely she is to suffer. In my case, there wasn't a lot in the personal history, but
it sort of came out of the blue for you. You felt like, you know, sort of Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde, right? It just came out of the blue.
Absolutely. Yeah. As a matter of fact, I mean, the pregnancy was so good, and I was, you know, I've always been a really upbeat, happy person. So, I mean, if this can happen to me, it can happen to anyone. No one is immune, clearly. Mm-hmm. And I was a good, but there was family history of various psychiatric disorders, so that did put me at high risk. Of course, nobody knew that at the time. And certainly, if one is isolated, if a mom is taking care of her children day in and day out by herself, without any emotional support or physical support, it puts her at high risk.
Right. But it's not just that. I mean, certainly there's that overwhelm factor, particularly when women have their first child. I mean, especially sometimes later in life, you know, they have established careers, and it's a big change. You know, they go from like a high-flying professional career to being a mom at home, and then, you know, having that one-on-one with a little tiny helpless baby, and that can be overwhelming. But there's more to it than that. There are biological reasons for this, correct?
Absolutely. Absolutely there are. And that is the number one biology that those of us in the field are really looking towards. Certainly the psychosocial factors of the isolation and the other having your support system in another state or something, that can certainly feed into it, and financial problems, etc., poor partner support. But we do look at the biochemical factors, the endocrine system shifting in such a huge way, affecting the brain chemistry, as the number one cause of the perinatal mood and anxiety disorders, postpartum depression being the most prevalent.
Well, let's look at that. You know, what happens to a woman's body from the time that she's pregnant to the postpartum time? What are some of the changes, and what are possibly some of the biological contributing factors to these mood changes?
I do want to say that it is definitely possible to suffer during pregnancy, and
yep,
frankly, just as many women are clinically depressed during pregnancy as postpartum, and we're trying to figure out...
And that's tricky, because then, you know, you really don't want to use a lot of powerful drugs. The role of medications during pregnancy is at best controversial, and at worst, I mean, there's some studies that suggest that taking psychiatric meds that are otherwise, you know, considered relatively innocuous might be harmful to the fetus, correct?
Well, that's a very tricky one, because depression itself crosses,
yes,
the placenta. And
yes,
that can also be, I mean, just depression
exactly
is connected to preterm delivery.
Exactly. So there's a question of, you know,
it really is a very individual, you know, risk-benefit situation, and that's why it's so important for pregnant women, when they're making this extremely difficult and tricky decision, to weigh out the pros and cons for her individually.
Okay.
So even as a
psychologist without a prescription pad, you're not inalterably opposed to medication. But
no.
It sounds like, from what I know about you, your orientation is more towards nutritional support, lifestyle support, good talk therapy, and so on. Correct?
And often that's all it takes. Now, sir, you're right. I am not anti-medication. I've seen medication save women's lives, pregnant women and postpartum and otherwise. But often, the best doctors, the doctors I work the closest with will say this to their patients, to their perinatal, pregnant and postpartum patients. They'll say, I'm willing to prescribe, but first get an assessment, get a full assessment, by Dr. Shosh or one of my colleagues. Mm-hmm. And if you still need a medication, then let's talk about meds. Often these women do not need medication when when we put together a really solid wellness strategy for them.
And what are some of the considerations there? Because, I asked earlier, it seems that hormone shift, there can be nutritional depletions, perhaps depletion of iron, essential fatty acids, that leave women feeling very, very played out.
Absolutely. And, I didn't really fully answer the question you asked me a few minutes ago, and I apologize.
Okay.
Women's bodies are going through, it's very easy to become depleted nutritionally as well as in other ways during pregnancy. So, for instance, sleep. I mean, sleep by itself is one of the most, it is dismissed, for new mothers and pregnant women. I have this one woman I'm thinking of in particular that I've been working with, and she told me, when she came to me, she was extremely depressed, and she said, she's 8 months pregnant, and she said she had just come from her OB's office, and the nurse at the OB's office, when she said, I'm not sleeping, said, well, of course you're not sleeping, you're 8 months pregnant. Well, what the nurse didn't ask her is, why do you think you're not sleeping? She just assumed, the nurse assumed, that it's because she was uncomfortable physically.
Yeah, right.
Had she asked the question, she would have said, well, yes, I'm getting up a little bit more frequently. I'm peeing during the night and then, a little bit of heartburn. But my head is racing with anxious thoughts, and I'm so afraid of not being a good mother to this child, and I was abused as a child. That's what would have come out. Luckily, another practitioner suggested that she speak with me, and now she's doing so much better. But it's very important not to assume that this stuff is normal, but to ask the right questions. To practitioners need to elicit this information by asking the right questions.
So, from a nutritional standpoint, I recognize that one of your qualifications is that you act as a brand representative for a company that makes essential fatty acid products, omega-3 and so on, fish oil, Nordic Naturals. Certainly that is thought to play a role in mood, correct?
It certainly can. And I'm not going to sit here saying that, a potentially life-threatening illness and a severe depression can be wiped out or completely alleviated by taking a supplement. But we have a lot of data at this point, and it's my job to study that data. I mean, as a clinical psychologist, I educate my clients. I don't prescribe. I tell them to talk with their, a health practitioner that they trust, but I educate them on the importance of omega-3. And the studies we have clearly demonstrate that omega-3 is not only help prevent depression during pregnancy for high-risk women, but they also treat it. So it's often used not necessarily as an alternative treatment to medication, if medication is needed, but it's used as a complementary treatment. But for some women, enough omega-3s plus other alternative treatments, that's enough.
And it also has beneficial effects on the offspring. Actually, a recent study was fascinating. I don't know if you saw it, came out recently. We expend a lot of money in this country trying to figure out why our kids are less smart than kids in other countries. We want to put money into our educational system. We want more teachers. We want more computers in classrooms. We want universal pre-K. But they did a study, and they found that regardless of the educational system and regardless of the economic status, even because they have poverty, these kids are, they don't get as good background. We need parenting skills and so on. The major variable was the amount of omega-3 fatty acids in mother's milk. And, of course, mothers who nurse their babies who are not taking in essential fatty acids, they won't impart essential fatty acids to their babies. You know, they do that in the womb, and then they do that afterwards. So this just seems like such a sensible measure all around. It helps the mom, it helps the baby, and so on.
Right. No pun intended, but it's a no-brainer. it's of the utmost importance to use omega-3 supplements of pure quality. And I'm often asked by my clients, well, how can I tell? You know, because the layperson, everybody's saying they've got the best company. And you did mention Nordic Naturals. I mean, this means I believe in that company. Again, you got to know where the fish comes from, how it's stored, how the supplements are manufactured. You know, most people don't know that stuff, but I do trust that particular brand. They have extremely high standards.
So what about just from the standpoint of diet? Is it possible that some of the women who are suffering from postpartum depression have subsisted on, you know, a meager or junk food diet, and therefore their brains are starved of nutrients?
Right, and it's so unfair because, you know, with depression and low serotonin, which often happens with the postpartum depression, we want to wake up our brain. So automatically the body is asking for quick wake-ups, and what do we grab? We grab the sugar, right?
Yeah.
So it becomes this horrible cycle. Sugar is one of the worst, you know, when it comes to both physical and mental wellness. So, you know, we feel that rush of energy, it wakes up our brain, but soon after, you know, our blood glucose level drops and it affects us with low moods and short-temperedness.
So really, you know, checking blood sugar, you know, which is something that we do when we work up our patients with mood issues, can be a big problem. You know, let me just actually just share with you just from my recollection of a patient I saw today. I saw a young man, very successful. He runs a he's an analyst for a major bank in the equities department. God knows how many billions of dollars he handles, but he's like a whiz kid. He has a department of people working for him. And yet he was suffering from, number one, Meniere syndrome, which is a syndrome where he was losing his hearing, but he was also suffering from memory problems. He didn't feel as sharp. He didn't feel as focused. And this is a young kid, so he's not, you know, suffering from dementia or Alzheimer's disease. And we found that he had ups and downs of blood sugar. He even had some degree of insulin resistance at a young age. He seemed overtly thin, but he had kind of a jelly roll around his waist. He ate no fish, zero fish. And we measured his levels of essential fatty acids, and they were vanishingly low. So we put him on a clean, natural foods diet. We stabilized his blood sugar. He was eating less carbs. He was drinking less coffee. He was taking fish oil supplements. And he comes back to us. This is about a year and a half later. He's focused. He's lost weight. He's exercising, and his Meniere's is stable. He's not losing his hearing anymore. So he was on a pro-inflammatory diet. He was having a lot of sugar. He had no essential fatty acids, and it literally affected his brain. We now know that inflammation, maybe in the gut or throughout the body, the brain becomes inflamed. That is sometimes a cause of mood disorders. Correct?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And there need to be more doctors like you. What a great story. Many, many people are in that very same boat, I'm sure.
Yeah. Added to the added stress of being a mom and having those rapid hormone shifts.
That's right.
I haven't actually read, you know, some of your, like, postpartum depression for dummies. But one of the things that I like to check in our postpartum women is I like to check the status of the hormones, particularly progesterone, which seems to be like a feel-good hormone, but also thyroid, because many women emerge from pregnancy with their thyroids off-kilter.
10% of postpartum women have a thyroid issue, and often they are misdiagnosed as having postpartum depression, and it's really a thyroid issue. So 2 to 3 months postpartum is when the endocrinologist, I hope you'll agree, the endocrinologist I work closely with will say, okay, that's when the thyroid has kind of calmed down and it's going to be where it's going to be. So get them tested then and see, because Hashimoto's thyroiditis, for instance, is very, very common. And often women are given antidepressants, and it's really an underlying thyroid issue.
Right. Yeah, it's ultra important, because also, you know, the body changes. You have 30, 40, as much as 50 pounds of extra weight. Your body's transformed as after the pregnancy. For many women, I noticed progesterone has a very calming effect. I ask women often who are suffering from anxiety or depression, how did you feel during pregnancy? And so often I get the answer, it's not always, but in many cases, I felt great. You know, if I'd known how good I was going to feel during pregnancy, I would have had four or five children. That suggests that they're responding well to the hormones of pregnancy, particularly progesterone, which is progestational, which promotes gestation or pregnancy. And when it's abruptly withdrawn, when the baby's out of you, then you crash.
That's right. You crash and you get really, really anxious. And often that leads to insomnia, and we know that sleep issues, you know, insomnia, not being able to sleep at night when your baby's sleeping, that's what you can tell you have insomnia, that can lead to all kinds of mental health issues.
So I sometimes I give a little topical progesterone, which it's not like giving estrogen in terms of its potential hazards of increasing the risk of breast cancer or uterine cancer. A little progesterone sometimes helps patients relax and sleep. It's sort of a natural Valium. It does help relax and sedate people.
Exactly right. Exactly right. No, that's wonderful. And that is what I mean. But once that baby's delivered, there is, you know, during pregnancy, the hormones will never, ever be as high again. You know, that they're extremely high. And there is such a precipitous drop, just as you mentioned. I mean, it's
almost like a mini menopause. You know, it's like a real crash and burn kind of situation.
Yeah, it is. So you know, giving some hormonal help can really help them ward off some of the mental health issues. So that's wonderful. It can be used as a preventive.
Right. Other nutrients that your research has suggested might play a role in optimizing energy and mood.
Yes, certainly the complex carbohydrates, beans, potatoes, whole grains, necessary for an upbeat mood since they affect the brain's power to make serotonin.
So, you know, people talk about the no-carb or ultra-low-carb diet. Maybe there's a role for some women to consume some healthy carbs to help promote absorption of...
I've got to tell you, I'm not speaking as a nutritionist, dietitian, et cetera. From what I have seen and from what I have researched myself, no carbs is not good.
You know, I got to say, and I'm a big admirer of, you know, recently we interviewed Dr. David Perlmutter, who recommends an ultra-low-carb diet for preventing Alzheimer's and dementia, and there's a lot of benefits to that, but there's a certain percentage of the population, it seems particularly women are vulnerable to this, when they go on no carbs, virtually no carbs, maybe they lose weight, but their mood really crashes.
Exactly.
And so you almost need a little bit. You have to check how you respond to that. Some people are good responders, some people not.
You do. And I'm not talking, you know, brownies. Complex
the
carbs.
The right carbs.
So, I mean, the amino acid tryptophan is important, as you know, for the formation of serotonin.
Yep.
And the complex carbs help the tryptophan cross the blood-brain barrier.
Exactly.
So it increases. I mean, I believe especially for women, at least what I've seen in the last 30 years of my practice, when they cut out, you know, when they do the paleo, you know, or various, you know, no carb or low carb, they're, just as you said, very accurately, their moods do not do well, and they feel so much better, including, you know, more relaxed, more focused, more everything good when they are having some complex carbs. Mm-hmm. So that, along with protein sprinkled throughout the day, really solid, wonderful protein, every 3 hours or so, nibbling protein can help keep the blood sugar even and the moods more stable.
How often is iron deficiency a contributor to this exhaustion, fatigue, and mood crash? Because, you know, it takes a lot of iron to make a baby, and some women maybe are on skimpy diets. And
yeah, I don't have a statistic for you, Dr. Hubman. I don't. I do know that I can tell you that throughout the years, I have often suggested that my clients get their iron tested, and more times than not, they're low, not necessarily, you know, extremely so, but a little on the deficient side. That can absolutely lead to the fatigue, which again feeds right in, no pun intended, to that cycle of grabbing the sugar to wake yourself up. So all these pieces kind of fit together. And I will also suggest they continue on an excellent prenatal vitamin because of there's folic acid in there. You know, folic acid is added
absolutely
to prenatal vitamin for to help with a child, you know, to help, you know, avoid against the neural tube defects. But what we're not taught is that that's good for the mom's mental health as well.
Exactly. And there's some people who seem to have a much higher requirement for that because due to some mutation in their genes. It's sometimes referred to as the MTHFR gene, which is makes them more likely to require high doses of things like B12 and folic acid and B6 to optimize their mood. So yeah, that's a concern. So in a multi, you know, one of the constituents of a multi, but all too often, you know, I don't like these prenatals because they'll give you like, okay, some vitamin D, like 400 international units. But Canada has now called for, I think they've called for 2,000 international units per day for pregnant women. I don't think we've gotten with a program here. And D actually can have an impact on mood as well. If you're low in D, your mood's going to really crash.
Well, vitamin D activates serotonin too. And research shows a very strong connection between low levels of vitamin D and symptoms of depression. I mean, the lower the vitamin D level, the greater the chance for depression. It hasn't been completely demonstrated clearly whether the low vitamin D levels cause the depression or there are depression, but either way you look at it.
It might be, you're saying it might be reverse causation or it might just be, you know, coinkydink or correlation and not necessarily.
Well, they're connected somehow. Mm-hmm. We don't know exactly how they're connected. Maybe you know more than I in that particular area, but I always ask about vitamin D. Did you get a blood test? I'll ask my clients. Have you gotten a blood test? Making sure your vitamin D levels are good, because that's always a smart thing.
It's good for the mom. It's good for the babies. And another thing, and I'm writing an article right now about the relationship between gut flora, the bacteria in our intestinal tract, and mood. You know, there's several studies that suggest that the right kind of probiotics can have a positive impact on mood. We know that people have toxic gut syndrome. Terribly constipated, or they have they've taken too many antibiotics, they may feel sluggish and lethargic and suffer from brain fog, or they may have candida or yeast problem, and that may cause them to feel less than optimal. And by repleting the beneficial bacteria, that sometimes has a mood boosting effect.
I'm looking forward to reading your article. I feel.
I'm working on it as we speak.
Great. Yeah, I can personally attest to that, and I know my kids can as well. But I'd love to read more about all that.
Great. Okay, so this is a logical point at which we can divide our podcast into two parts. Normally, our podcasts are in two sections. So let's stipulate this is part one. When we return in part two, we'll talk about the current state of the field of psychology and psychiatry and what we can do to reach a more comprehensive model for optimizing mental health. Our guest is Dr. Shoshana Bennett, better known as Dr. Shosh to her fans and readers. And you can find out more about her at her website, drshosh.com. We'll be back in just a moment with part two of our discussion about postpartum depression and the relationship between nutrition and lifestyle and mood. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and this is the Intelligent Medicine Podcast.